Hey, moms, welcome to this episode of the Dorenda Wilson Podcast. I'm Dorenda, wife to one, mom to eight, nana to 11, and 30-year veteran homeschooling mom. I'm also the author of four books, The Unhurried Homeschooler, Unhurried Grace for a Mom's Heart, The 4-Hour School Day, and Raising Boys to Men, a simple, mercifully short book on raising and homeschooling boys. That's a book that I just recently published, and oh my goodness, the feedback and the number of moms who have chosen to read this book has been absolutely astounding. So I hope that if you haven't yet read it, you will check it out, or any of my books. You can find them all on Amazon. The audiobooks for Raising Boys to Men and The Unhurried Homeschooler is available exclusively at my website, dorendawilson.com/audiobooks. I'll leave a link in the show notes. Well, we're super excited you're here today. And you know, there is an opportunity possibly for us to meet in person. I'm going to be at several homeschool conferences. So I'm going to leave a link in the show notes so that you can see where I'm going to be and when, and I would love to meet you in person. Also, if you've got teens, be sure to listen after the prayer at the end of this episode to hear about an opportunity you are not going to want to miss out on. Let's talk about math briefly, quickly. Have you ever felt limited by grade-specific math materials? Ever wished your child could revisit earlier lessons or jump ahead when they're ready? Here's a not-so-secret gem I've come across: CTC Math, where boundaries in learning simply don't exist. With a single subscription, you gain access to all lessons across all grade levels from kindergarten right up to 12th grade. Imagine the freedom. Struggling with a concept? Jump back a grade for clarity. Ready to advance? Forge ahead. Perfect for homeschoolers, after-school tutoring, or anyone wanting to truly master math at their own pace. Unlock unlimited potential with CTC Math. Dive in today at ctcmath.com and redefine your educational journey. Okay, so moms, we all know it's coming. Eventually, we graduate our kids from homeschool, and thoughts of college might be on the horizon. Today, we're going to talk about whether or not college is worth the cost. So we're going to look at what has changed in the college landscape that affects our students, not just financially, but also mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. We're going to touch on that as well. But before we do that, I want to tell you about our other sponsor, Heritage Defense. As many of you know, in 2022, my family had a harrowing experience with CPS. The accusations were ultimately proven to be 100% false, but all of this affected us deeply. I've since learned that our situation would have looked very differently had we been members of Heritage Defense. Heritage Defense is a nonprofit legal advocacy organization defending Christian homeschool families against CPS. As we experience more and more pushback as believing families, I encourage you to consider becoming a member. Just go to heritagedefense.org for more information. I'll leave a link in the show notes. Okay, moms, if you've been listening to this podcast for any length of time, you'll know that I'm not a huge fan of college for many reasons. And it's not that I'm against it completely. I just think there are often more efficient and effective ways to get to the same goal. One of my biggest hangups with college is simply the cost. I've seen countless people put themselves in debt and then struggle for years, even decades, trying to pay it off, often for a degree they aren't even using. So today I invited Andrew Chambers to talk about what's changed in the college landscape and how we can better position ourselves as parents to help our kids make wiser decisions regarding their higher education. So let me tell you a little bit about Andrew. He is the head of campus life at XL College in Black Mountain, North Carolina. XL is an innovative Christian college forging a new educational path for students to become wise, mature, and productive adults who live purposeful, fulfilling lives. Now, I've had him on the podcast before. I will leave a link in the show notes so you can listen to that episode as well. But he and his wife, Charity, live on campus with their two boys, Evan and Jesse, and love every minute of it. Welcome, Andrew. We're so glad you're here today.
Hey, Dorenda. It's good to see you again.
All right. Well, let's just dive right in. This isn't a topic that's normally in my little wheelhouse of episodes, but I do think that it has a place because one of the things that we are focusing on this year at the podcast or in the podcast, I'm not even using the right preposition. I is a homeschooling mom. So what we've talked about from the beginning of the year, kind of our goal this year, in these episodes is to make us wiser women of God. Mm. And so there's lots of areas where we need wisdom, and I think this is one of them. And so I think it's important for us to sort of maybe update our view of college and what it can actually offer and maybe what it can't, and, you know, just talk about this topic and talk about it more. You know, we want to talk about the financial end of it, but we also want to touch on some of the other aspects of college life and the college experience that might not be the greatest. And so we'll get to that in just a minute, but let's start with this question. College used to be the gateway to the American dream. You know, we've all been told you got to go to college. College yep. is the only path to success. So tell us, what has changed in the college landscape?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think, you know, that all started back in the, actually in the 60s, when Lyndon Johnson told Congress, higher education is not just a luxury, it's actually a necessity for our people. And the deal was that going to college was what allowed you to become a scientist or a lawyer, or essentially those higher professional, you know, quote unquote, higher professional occupations that, right. you know, they thought were really going to kind of upskill the nation. And so for a long time, that was the thing. So I know, like, you probably grew up with, and I definitely grew up with, like, you got to go mm-hmm. get your bachelor's.
Right.
And then it became where a bachelor's wasn't even enough. You could really had to get a master's to be able to compete. Mm-hmm. And for my generation, like my whole generation missed the trades completely mm-hmm. because we were told that you weren't going to be able to live the American dream unless you had a white collar job.
Right.
That college was going to essentially get you. And it worked for a while. And it worked for a while, you know? A lot of people did go on to build successful careers. But I also think the landscape was different. And what happened is, you know, this is like pretty well known thing, but like college didn't used to be in the skills production game or in the skills development game. It was always in the wisdom and maturity game up until the Industrial Revolution hit.
Interesting. Wow.
Yeah. And we can talk about that a little bit, but...
Yeah. Tell us just a little bit about that, because that really catches my attention. So the wisdom and what else did you say? Wisdom and...
It was supposed to be wisdom and maturity. College was supposed to be mostly about the liberal arts.
Right.
And about producing wisdom and maturity, because the leaders of tomorrow went to college. Like if you were going to be a farmer or an ag guy or a mechanic or
right.
even you didn't even go to college. Right. And honestly, most colleges when they started were Christian colleges because they wanted you to have a holistic worldview. And so you can actually, and that's what the liberal arts are for, to be able to look right. at history. Like what were the good ideas of history? What have worked? What has not worked? So that our leaders of tomorrow could lead us in a direction according to God's principles.
Is so not that anymore.
It's
actually the opposite of that.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, let's just talk about that, because I think that everybody skips that part of it.
Yeah.
But as believers, again, we have to exercise wisdom and discernment and mm-hmm. having that knowledge and facing up to, like, this is the reality of college. What it was is not what it is.
Exactly. And so, you know, what we now call the gen eds, which mm-hmm. is like, hey, let me run through these things so I can get to my major. You know, it's philosophy right. 101, economics 103, biology right. 102. Those used to be the liberal arts. And those actually were not throwaways on the way to my major. They were actually the things that were supposed to form my character so that I could learn to live in society. Well, what happened with the Industrial Revolution is... it brought a lot of good things, like cars are great. You know, I like mm-hmm. those. I like being able to.
Sure.
planes are like all this technology and innovation is awesome, but it shifted us from an agricultural society that was slow. You know, you kind of mostly did economic development within your community. It wasn't so globalized, to an industrial society where we had to get as many people into the factories and the economy as possible right. so we could right. keep producing and consuming.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And actually, after World War II, in order to keep all of our factories open, the president of Lehman Brothers actually said, we need to switch America from a needs-based economy to a desires-based economy.
Mm. Well, that's happened. That has definitely happened.
In order to keep all of these people working. And so, how are you going to funnel people into the factories? Mm-hmm. How are you going to funnel them into the marketplace? How are you? And so we became not a person that has like an occupation, but we actually became economic man and producers and consumers. And so college shifted from, I'm trying to form the character of the leaders of tomorrow to we're trying to produce consumers and producers that can keep this economic machine running. And and so there's no reason for like mature wise, like that's the wrong thing. You're supposed to be talking about how do I get you into the marketplace?
Right.
And we've seen the effects of that. And so that's when, so the gen eds are they're a complete throwaway now. And not only that, but what most people don't understand is like, you are always communicating a worldview. Mm-hmm. Every movie is communicating a worldview. Every song is communicating a worldview. Every book is communicating a worldview. And so when you tried to take like God out of the classroom, out of college, you had to replace him with something else.
Right, right.
And a lot, I mean, it's pretty well documented that a lot of the worldview we communicate in our college stuff came through a lot of the German philosophers that were out of the Enlightenment. How do we talk about life without God?
Right. So would you say that, is Marxist too strong of a word?
Well, no, it's not. It's not. And that's probably the term that I would use. I try to just, some people can get all, you know, so
worked
I try
up.
To,
yeah.
all worked yeah. up. So I just try to describe it without actually saying it. But yeah, I mean.
Sorry.
You went first, so I'm there.
That's right. Okay. Well, bias, yeah. So. And that's what I'm seeing is, you know, there is an influence into the quote unquote wisdom and maturity, but it's a negative influence. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely being used for what I believe it's intended for. Mm-hmm. And so, and that's where as parents, you have to step back and say, is this the wisest choice for my child? You know?
Yeah.
So, so let's talk just a little bit. Maybe you could just talk a little bit more about the money part of it, and then we'll dive into some of the other little pieces in terms of mental, emotional, spiritual challenges.
Yeah. So up until the 60s, not everyone went to college, and it wasn't viewed as the gatekeeper to the American dream, and it wasn't a necessity. But when President Johnson came out and said, hey, this is not a luxury anymore. It is a necessity, and we have to upskill our workforce, mm-hmm. which, by the way, just a little tangent. Really, this started back in the 50s when the USSR launched Sputnik, and they had all the scientists, all the engineers, and we're looking at that saying, we've got to keep up. Our population mm-hmm. has to keep up. And so that's where the STEM stuff comes in, because we want to stay ahead of Russia. We want to stay ahead of China. And so that's when they first started doing financing as far as government goes. And then in the 60s is when Johnson really kind of multiplied it as far as the government being able to subsidize loans and then actually give loans as well. To now the Department of Education owns $1.6 trillion of the $1.7 trillion in debt.
And wow.
What any economist knows is once you introduce debt into a system to quote unquote make it more accessible, prices in that system go up. Why? Because they know that there's now, instead of college being a luxury of if you can afford it, you go. Now it's just like a car or a house. Anyone can take a loan out and go.
Right, right, right.
What you
and it's like an acquisition. It's like this is the next thing you do.
Yes, yes.
And no matter the cost.
Yeah, and that's not even a feeling. There's like numbers behind that. And so college debt is the second most profound or highest number of debt in the country behind mortgage debt. It's in front of credit cards. It's in front of car loans. And it's at $1.76 trillion right now. It's growing faster than any other kind of debt.
Wow.
So it's like the average person is like $37,000. The average person takes them over 15 years to see an ROI on their, you know, quote unquote investment.
Right.
And like 75% of people that actually went to college are not even working in the field they went to college for.
Right. Right.
And so if you're a business person, like I, you know, I was in the marketplace, like I'm thinking like would I invest in a business that does that well?
And right.
The
answer is exactly. No. Yeah. You know? Just practically speaking, numbers wise, that investment isn't isn't showing that it's a worthwhile investment. No one would ever take that investment under any other circumstances. So why do people do it?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. One is, for a while, actually, like economically and marketplace wise, when I say the gatekeeper to the American dream, I mean literal gatekeeper, as in a lot of Fortune 500 companies, like government jobs, they would not let you in unless you had a bachelor's degree.
Right.
Period.
Right.
Whether that was degree was actually effective or not at getting you into their marketplace, you couldn't get in unless you had the bachelor's. So that's one thing.
Right.
And then the second thing is just this whole, the whole mantra of like, unless you go to college, you are not going to be able to succeed in the marketplace.
Right.
Or you're not smart enough to succeed in the marketplace. Like my mom was an office manager for a lawyer in Memphis, successful at doing that, did that for 30 years, didn't go to college, and always kind of had this thing of like, man, I wish I went to college. I'm like, mom, you like led an office of like 30 something people and like crushing right. it. Like, why do you, you know, but there was just this thing of like, you got to go. And so what's happening now is the industrial age is over. Like we're out of that.
Right. Right.
And we're moving into the information age. And what people have realized is college is not the only place where you can learn. Mm-hmm. You can actually learn anywhere. And like before college, we had great ways to learn. They were called apprenticeships.
Right.
And if you wanted to go learn something, you went set up under somebody and mastered it. And so now in companies, I mean, so we work with a lot of employers because that's how we do our internships and apprenticeships to give them college credit because we think the best way to learn is through the marketplace. And what I've asked employers is like, what do you need our students to know before they get to? And hands down, almost all of them, you know, they'll have some certifications you need to get that are very industry specific.
Sure.
But they're all saying, can they show up on time? Do they care? Can they work with customers well? Can they take feedback? Can they think critically? It's all about soft skills. And the degree used to indicate soft skills and it no longer does that.
Right. That's good. That's good.
And actually, the people that did that study were from the Burning Glass Institute, which was a Harvard-related thing. And they actually said employers are saying degree no longer equals soft skills. And so now what do we look for on resumes?
Right, well, right. Exactly. Well, this seems like a perfect place to insert this quote from the Foundation for Economic Education. It says this, our society is slowly moving away from the outmoded way of resume building, whereby people try to achieve the best GPAs at the most prestigious schools. Indeed, many employers today are less concerned about where an applicant went to school than they are with the applicant's actual skills. And then it goes on to say, doubtless, traditional four-year institutions do teach some actual skills. That's not the question. The question is, do they teach those skills efficiently?
Right.
Compared to the plethora of alternative educational methods today, I believe the answer is no. That's what the author is saying. And moms, I'll leave a link in the show notes to that article so you can read the whole thing if you want to. So yeah, that it lines up completely with what you're saying. So I think it is important for us as parents to understand that this whole landscape is shifting. Don't cling to this idea that college is the only path to success for your student, because it certainly is not.
And I'll prove it to you. So like the state of Massachusetts, so they're the government of the state of Massachusetts is the largest employer in Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. And the governor, you know, people have different political opinions, whatever. This is a both sides of the aisle issue that most people agree on, by the way.
Right, right.
Actually took away, she put out an executive order where she said, unless the degree is required to do the job, i.e. unless you're going to gain skills getting that degree where it's required to do the job, we are not going to allow degree requirements in job postings for the state Massachusetts. Mm. So once they went and scrubbed the website, And took all the degree requirements away. Guess what percentage of jobs still need a degree?
I have no idea.
7%. So 93% of jobs that used to require a degree actually did not need one.
Wow.
And so Massachusetts did it. The feds just did it. They're trying to provide funding for 1 million apprenticeships over the next 10 years.
Wow.
You think apprenticeships, you think trades, but we're starting to do it in healthcare, accounting, mm-hmm. IT. Mm-hmm. And what we're realizing is, which by the way, America is last place, dead last out of developing countries developed countries as far as apprenticeships goes. And all these other countries realize, like, you know, Switzerland, Germany, Sweden, they use apprenticeships to get people into the marketplace. And the four-year degree has its place, which we can talk about. But if you don't need to go, you don't go. You go to an apprenticeship, right. and that's what gets you into the marketplace. So
yeah, that's excellent. So real quickly, just in a nutshell, share with the parents how much the cost of college has grown, just so they can kind of see, oh, this is how much it's changed.
Yeah. So from 1965 to 2020, 1600%, which is tripled. Ooh. That's more than the cost of healthcare has grown. Mm. If that tells you, I mean,
yeah,
that's probably all you need to say there.
right.
Yeah.
Man, that's crazy. So, and then from our notes here, I'm reading that for a 4-year bachelor degree, the average total cost of attendance for students residing on campus was $104,000 at public schools, over $131,000 at private for-profit schools, and $223,000 at private nonprofit schools. So, and then you're also, I just have to say this other note that you have here because it's great. Student loan debt is one of the few uncollateralized debts that you can't get rid of in bankruptcy. So you are stuck with it. I mean, unless somehow you get the relief that they're trying to give students. But
yeah.
I mean, really, it's just such an upside down system. So why do that if you don't have to? I know families who have, you know, 3 or 4 little kids. They're still paying off school debt mm-hmm. and trying to raise a family and support a family. Sure. And it's so hard. And we know that financial strain is one of the number one causes of marital, you know, problems or divorce. And so, you know, we want to set our kids up for success. And that's the point. We want to make sure that our kids are going to they're meeting the goal, but they're meeting it in a way that isn't going to cost them. And that's why I, you know, titled this Is College Worth the Cost? So let's just touch real quickly on just sort of the college environment. Because I think mm-hmm. it's important for us to stop and say, okay, the goal is, I think everyone would say the goal is to get that degree, to get that experience or whatever, so that you can go and provide for your family or make a good living or whatever. But at what cost? And mm-hmm. I'm specifically kind of targeting the public arena when it comes to college. So the question that we have to ask ourselves is what is being taught and mm-hmm. What about this hostile environment for Christian students? Because it's become more and more and more hostile. And so if you could just talk a little bit about why that matters and then, you know, maybe talk about a better option.
Yeah. So do you know who Helen Smallbone is? She's
She's so, the mom of For King and Country and Rebecca St. James.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. So she actually spoke at that Refresh Ministries conference that you did last year. She spoke this year and we sponsored it this year. So I did 5 minutes on stage just about Excel and afterwards she was in her Q&A and she goes, you know, she's from Australia. Mm-hmm. And she goes, you know, when I heard what you were talking about, something that struck me is America is the only country in the world that I know of that actually sends their kids like away to all live together in dorms to go to school. Mm-hmm. And she was like, you know, in Australia, our kids go to college, but they stay at home and they stay implanted in the family. Mm-hmm. And so they still have that nurturing. They still like know like how to actually like talk about the things that are going on at school and maybe bounce ideas off. And she was like, and I don't think it's a coincidence that many would attribute the decline of American culture to higher education. And I was like, wow, I have never thought about that. Mm-hmm. And essentially what she's saying is, you know, not all ideas are good ideas and not all ideas should be given the same weight. Mm-hmm. And when you go to college, so when I went to college, like when I took philosophy class, they, you know, you read all these philosophers and you got to know what they're talking about. And then they say, which one do you like best? Like, how do you think life runs? And that doesn't like, that seems, oh, okay, cool. But like when you got a bunch of 18 to 22 year olds that are experiencing life for the first time, getting just inundated with ideas from literally all kinds of worldviews from all over the world. And they're getting told that all of them have the same merit.
Right.
That's the thing. because over time we've seen some ideas like that's not a good idea. And we've actually seen that that's true, you know? Mm-hmm. And like, okay, Jesus has actually proven king over that area. And right. You don't hear that anymore. We're actually bringing stuff from the past back up. I'm like, yeah, do you like this idea? That's in philosophy. And, you know, in biology, you know, the test I took, it's like, you have to agree with like, however old they say the earth is or however.
Right.
That even though that changes every couple of years, you know.
Even though it's technically a theory.
Yeah.
It's taught as fact.
Yeah. And if you don't get it right, or if you don't put it right on your test, you know, get a bad grade on that test.
Right.
And,
so you literally have to do something that says that there isn't a creator. There, you have to literally say that there's not a creator by answering those questions in that way.
Yeah. And
if you want a good grade on the test.
If you want a good grade. And then not only that, but like, so I was talking to a guy, he leads Charlotte Mason schools all over the other day. Mm-hmm. He's like, when we have people come and teach for us, we say, go get a great education and stay away from the education department. Because because education and social work, like I've just kind of been around in that game for a while. And literally from a federal level, you have to remove God from the picture. Mm-hmm. And replace all these humanistic ideas.
Right.
And then you have to think that way in order to work, like in the education system or in the social work system. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And if you don't, you ain't getting a job.
Yeah. And so, because it affects, like you said, it permeates not just the curriculum and the bookwork part of it, but it also permeates every aspect of college life, you know, the social aspect. The friendship aspect, you know, everything around you is going to be screaming that Jesus is not Lord. And to be in that setting day in, day out for weeks and months and years, I don't know how we can expect that to not affect our kids. And so, you know, what do we really want for our kids in this season after high school? Well, we want them to prepare for whatever it is God has for them, a career or whatever, but we also want to prepare them for life. And so I'd love for you to share, just kind of like contrast the difference between the things that we talked about, that are on the public college scene versus what it looks like at XL College.
Yeah. And so I think the important part in that is everyone has to go on a coming of age journey. It's true throughout all of human history. It's true.
Yes.
And you have to transition from adolescence to adulthood. And up until now, we have shopped that coming of age journey out to the public sector in college. Mm-hmm. And so that's why, you know, when you're talking about surrounded by stuff that screams everything but Jesus is Lord, because all these kids are trying to figure out who they are together with no leadership, no guidance.
Right.
And getting hit with all these ideas on their coming of age journey. Like, what a terrible time for this.
Right.
And so, what we realized, like, I kind of like to call us like a parallel alternative model, because what we know is that coming of age journey has to happen and it has to be facilitated. Mm-hmm. And so what we've done is we've built a college. We're under religious exemption. So we have no federal money. We're not controlled by the state. We don't have to hire whoever they tell us to hire. And so what we did was, so we actually restored the liberal arts to their rightful place, to help produce wisdom and maturity. We do them through a biblical lens. Mm-hmm. And we read great authors and we read opposing viewpoints. We read Marx, we read Bertrand Russell, we read all those guys, but we read them alongside Christian authors and with the wisdom of the Bible next to them and with facilitators that know how to actually help students wrestle with questions. We use Socratic method. Mm-hmm. And so they actually are in a facilitated dialogue, not in a dorm room, just kind of tossing stuff at a wall.
Right. Someone might not understand what the Socratic method is. Can you just briefly explain that?
Yeah. So Socratic method is it's questions-based discovery. And so what you do is you don't read textbooks about what Plato said about this. You read Plato or you read C.S. Lewis. Mm-hmm. And so they're the lecturer. And then you actually are together in a circle and you actually discuss and come and wrestle together and come to conclusion together. And so you can have people with you that say, well, you know, that might sound like a good idea, but what happens with, you know, and actually challenge and critique thought and come to conclusion that way.
Asking questions. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we start with critical thinking, teach them how to think. Mm-hmm. and discernment.
And this is like, preparing them for life, you know? And that's what that season is, that coming of age is like, they're getting, I mean, we've laid a foundation, but there has to be almost like the cement has to dry kind of thing, you know? Yeah. And so this experience, I think that kind of experience can just be so solidifying.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And then, so we go from critical thinking to theology because it's the queen of the sciences.
Sure.
And if you got good theology, you'll have good philosophy. But if you have bad theology, you'll have bad philosophy. And then if your philosophy is bad, how bad is your anthropology going to be? We're asking questions like, what is a man? And so, but we're doing all that while side by side, they're actually apprenticing, interning, and getting jobs in the marketplace. Mm. And we actually have a no debt model because we've built a model to where students can work the entire time that they're here, not for us, but actually out in the community and earn a wage while they're here. And so school, parents, students together, we've actually kind of built a three-way model where the student will graduate debt-free. Mm. They'll graduate with a resume because they've been in the workplace and been getting hands-on experience in the field they want to go into. And they're learning to thrive in Christian communities. So we actually, our students live in homes. They don't live in dorms. Mm. They eat dinner together around the table. They learn how to cook and clean and take care of the home. Our faculty and staff live on campus with our families because our whole thing is when you graduate college, it's you went from adolescence to adulthood, or you were supposed to.
Right.
Which means you should be ready to build a healthy marriage and family. And well, we don't think that's something that is just taught. It has to be caught as well.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I love that. And that idea of, I mean, I've heard testimonies of graduates from the college talking about how even just going to the camp where they have made, you know, lifetime friendships that they are believe are going to be, you know, they're going to be bonded for life. And so, you know, as our kids go out into, you know, to live out their faith in their work and their family life, what a blessing to have friends already in place that you've grown with, that you've been challenged with, to sort of undergird them as they move out into the, you know, quote unquote real world, you know, and understanding what healthy community is. There are so many churches that are, unfortunately don't model that well. It's a lot of bickering and gossiping and, you know, little cliques and things like that. And so for our kids to be able to experience a kind of like a larger Christian family setting, it really sets an example to them and a vision for what is the church, how's the church supposed to function? You know, that means we're allowed to challenge each other in, you know, ideas and things like that. You know, as you're walking through this Socratic approach that you mentioned, and these kids are doing this with other kids. And so I can see how all of that would just be such an amazing preparation for stepping out into adulthood. And I love, it's a fraction of the time. How long does it take?
So we do the whole degree in 3 years. And the reason that we do that is because they actually go straight through. They have week-long breaks, you know, every semester. But the reason that we do that is because if they're going to be working with an employer, you can't just like leave for the summertime, you know?
Right.
And we think education and discipleship have a momentum to them.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, absolutely. You know how it is. Like when you take a summer break after school, it's hard like to come back.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And so we keep it all going.
I love that. I love that. Kind of like that line upon line, precept upon precept in scripture. Absolutely. It talks about that. Yeah. So I think we've kind of covered the financial, we've covered the mental, the emotional, the spiritual aspect. I want to just touch real quickly on the actual reality, especially for girls, young women on the college scene before we close this episode. And I was reading in the Epoch Times that during their time at college, the Department of Justice estimates that 1 in 5 women will be sexually assaulted, and as many as 95% of the cases go unreported. Wow. So that alone is a huge red flag, especially for our young women. That is not a place we want to put them, or, you know, it would be, I think it's something to consider is what I'm saying. Also, one last little bit of information in that article said so many sexual assault victims have filed complaints that there are now 71 schools under federal investigation.
Wow.
So, you know, that's kind of a, you know, I think it's important to bring all of this to the surface, everything we've talked about, to give parents a better kind of like a better picture of the landscape, and so that they can make wiser decisions when it comes to college. But I'm just, as a final question, I want to ask you, is there a point at which college is worth it?
Yeah, I would say so. And because here's the thing, we don't want to discriminate like education wise, and everything has its place, right? And
right.
So like, if you're going to be a doctor or a lawyer or, and some of those like engineer, like you actually need a ton of classroom time.
Right.
Like if you're going to be doing surgery on me, you have better have been in classroom for 8 years, you know, learning the science
and also practiced getting your, on somebody else. Practiced.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would say in a lot of those professions, but even lawyer, what we found is like our critical thinking and our liberal arts portion actually trains students really well for that. So what we've done is we've partnered with WGU there. Now we probably don't agree with their values necessarily, but they don't actually have gen eds at all. They're all competency based and you just go in your field of training. And so like we've got a student that wants to become a lawyer. And so he's going to finish his accredited accounting degree from there. For his phase two with us so that he can go on to law school after that.
Wow.
So
that's amazing.
Yeah. So I'd say like those kind of pathways, you should go to an accredited, that matters, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That matters. So let me see if I've got this straight. 'Cause I'm not sure it's clear for everybody.
Yeah.
So your students start out with the critical thinking aspect, these are some of the basic things that you walk through with them, right? So maybe walk us real quickly through I guess you called them phases of your college program, because it's going to look different than what we're used to.
Yes. So I'll just give you a 30,000 foot view. So during phase one, they're in the liberal arts and it's one subject at a time in the flow of the biblical narrative. So starting with critical thinking, theology, going all the way to fine arts, economics. So you hit anthropology, sociology. That's 2 days a week. But you're on full days, so it's once. So you're deep in sociology for 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. At the same time, every Monday morning we do a launch class where we're teaching the soft skills. Mm-hmm. So we're going through like 7 habits of highly effective people. We're doing attitude 101. We're actually teaching them how to like shake hands well and make eye contact, interview well, and resumes. So that's all, and then they're working in the marketplace the rest of the week to earn a wage, and that's your entry level job. So like you're working at Taco Billy and Starbucks and pizza, you know, that kind of stuff. And what you're doing is you're learning how to be a good employee. Mm-hmm. So we've kind of pictured it like a DNA strand because we're forming people. So phase one, the majority is in the liberal arts, but they're also doing the practicum. So the majority is the core liberal arts that are also doing the practicum. Well, phase two, the emphasis switches and it goes into the marketplace. And so now you're doing an internship or an apprenticeship in the field that you want to go into. And so if you want to be an electrician, you're apprenticing as an electrician. If you want to be a graphic designer, you're apprenticing as a graphic designer. If you want to be a mechanic, but also you're going backwards actually through our core liberal arts program. So in the first phase, we taught you wisdom and through the liberal arts. So you start with theology and end with economics. So you start with God, you end with economics. The second phase, you start with economics and you go back down to theology, but this time we're focusing on virtue. So same subjects, but different emphasis. And different material. But so you're doing wisdom and soft skills training for the marketplace. Then you're doing hard skills training in marketplace while learning virtue to actually learn how to live well in the marketplace. And all the while you've built a resume. Mm-hmm. And so you graduate with 36 months of work experience.
Wow.
And 18 of those months are specifically in the field that you want to go into.
That's
so
amazing.
Hopefully you've graduated a wise, mature, productive adult, ready to follow Jesus into a life of flourishing. So.
I love it. Well, that seems like a great place to wrap this episode up. Thank you, Andrew, for being with us and love the conversation. It was great. So thanks again.
Oh man, always a joy to come on.
All right. I'm going to just close in prayer real quickly. Lord, I just pray over these parents who are potentially looking at making decisions when it comes to their children's future and their decisions regarding higher education. Lord, I lift up every parent. I ask that just the parts of this conversation that they need to remember, you would bring back to their mind and help them to be able to just kind of go all the way with those thoughts and really implement the wisdom that they may have pulled from this conversation. I ask that you would give them wisdom and clarity and show them exactly what direction to take for their own student, Lord. We thank you for your goodness to us. We thank you that in the midst of the chaos and the craziness that's going on in the world, you are bringing forth so many wonderful new resources. And so we thank you for XL College. We thank you for the work that they're doing there. Thank you for Andrew. And we just thank you for this time that we had together today. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
All right, moms, before you leave, I want to let you know that we are less than 3 weeks away from the first session of XL's Summer Leadership Camp. With training in subjects such as critical thinking, wilderness first aid, and CPR that takes place in the context of adventures like rock climbing, whitewater rafting, and camping in the wilderness of Western North Carolina, you don't want your teen to miss out on this camp experience. There will be 5 camp sessions that host 20 campers, 16 to 19 years of age per session. Don't wait on this opportunity to send your teen to the camp of a lifetime. The first camp session begins May 19th, and there are only a few spots left. Head over to thexlcamp.org to begin the registration process today. Have a great day, moms.